First of all, Coach, happy holidays.
Thank you. Yep, same to you and all the listeners. You betcha.
What was the best thing at the Thanksgiving table this year?
Oh, boy. Everything that was on the plate.
Seconds, thirds, how many times you go back?
Saving for pumpkin pie, too, so.
That overrated pumpkin pie.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, yesterday, for what I guess the third straight game, slow start for your team, second half much better than the first half. Why does that happen to a team again three times in a row?
Yeah, well, I wish if I had that answer, I would fix it this week, try to fix it next week, so. You know, we just got to do a better job. I got to do a better job preparing the team for the beginning part of the game. We got to do a better job executing that.
Bill, I know this has come up a number of times over the years. It seems like you've had stretches where a couple games in a row, the start is an issue. And I remember once asking you, and you said, believe it or not, Andy, we try to start fast every week. So what can you do specifically in a week to try to ignite something? Can you do faster tempo? Is there anything specific you can do?
Yeah, well, we'll try to do what we think's best. I don't know, take a look at it here and get into Cleveland and see how the game plan unfolds and what we're going to be doing and how we can, best take advantage of whatever we think our opportunities will be early.
You said last week that at halftime of the Denver game you were obviously upset about the turnovers, et cetera, but not that discouraged about the way the team had played overall. And certainly, you even said you were more upset about the way you'd played in the first half of the Carolina game than the Denver game. What was it like yesterday at halftime?
It wasn't great. I didn't think we took advantage of some of the opportunities that we had, and we gave them some, and obviously the interception set them up. Unfortunately, we were able to hold them to three on that. We gave up two good drives defensively. So gave up the opening kickoff return, especially after we, had done that last year in the playoff game. That wasn't a very good start. So, we were trying to find our rhythm and our execution on a number of things yesterday. It wasn't a great feeling.
When you talk about the interception, I think that's the third time this year Tom has thrown a pick directed at Gronk, where Gronk almost didn't even really have a chance to fight for the football. And how big a he's obviously a guy that if you give him a chance to reach it with that wingspan, he can at least probably break it up. How frustrating is it when it doesn't even get to him at that point?
I don't think any quarterback wants to see the defense end up with the ball. So, I'm sure it's one Tom would like to have back.
Logan Ryan seems to be around the ball a lot, rookie player, young player. I certainly don't know enough to tell you whether he does his job proficiently, play in, play out. Maybe you could shed some more light on it. But he does seem to be around the ball a lot and seems to come up with a lot of big plays. How has he matured over the course of this year?
Logan's been a pretty mature kid since the day he got here, and he had a real solid career in college. Was a steady performer for him for throughout his career, and he's done that for us. He's worked at safety, he's worked at corner, he's worked inside in the nickel position. So, he's smart. He understands defenses, defensive concepts. Probably the interception he had yesterday would be one of the easier ones. With the pressure we had on the quarterback, and as he got hit, the ball just kind of flew out there to him. But it was an excellent coverage play ahead on Hopkins at the end of the game on that was a third down play, and kind of stop route on the sideline would have broke that up. So the strip sack he had in the Miami game, was a huge play in that game, really. He's done a good job for us in run force, done a good job for us in coverage, and he's had a couple pressure opportunities and made those count too.
How challenging has it been for Matt Patricia and for you game planning? I think this week you had five defensive backs who ended up being questionable on the Friday injury report. How much of the game plan changes in the defensive backfield based on personnel, or are those guys just expected to run what you guys have drawn up?
Especially when you're matching up, which we've done that quite a bit. Match certain guys on certain receivers. You gotta plan, and you also have to have an alternative plan if you need to go to it. So, Matt and Josh Boyer, Brian Flores, our safety and corners coach, those guys have done a good job of that all year. So, whatever it happens to be that week, we just have to deal with it and try to figure it out and try to make it something that we feel is competitive, that'll work, but also simple enough so that we don't, make it too difficult. So we're out there trying to, put a you know, put a jigsaw puzzle together when we need to be aggressive and play football. So it's, you know, there's a, you know, fine line there.
How is Dante Hightower playing?
I thought High had a nice job, did a nice job yesterday. You know, had a number of tackles, made some plays in pass coverage. You know, I mean, defensively, I don't think that was, you know, our all-time best performance, but, so there's plays everybody'd like to have back, but I thought he showed a positive on a number of plays.
He's been criticized in the media quite a bit since yesterday, maybe even a little bit last week as well, specifically for how he's reacted in run coverage. Again, your comments are much more positive. What is it that there are certain people seeing that you see differently? Do you know where that disconnect would be?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to talk to other people who commented on it. I have no idea.
But you're fairly happy with the way he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we like to have you know, some other guys playing as well as he is. Let's put it that way.
I got to talk about the play of the year, in my opinion, and that's James Devlin's touchdown run as a old high school fullback. That was my favorite play to watch this year. Just talk about not only that run, but the contributions he's given you in kind of a variety of roles this year on the offense, from fullback, ball carrier, pass catcher, H-back, whatever he's been asked to do.
Yeah, well, James, you know, he has a role on the team, and he's been very good about doing his role, doing his job, whether it be on offense or in the kicking game. At times in pass protection, at times in the running game, usually as a blocker, caught some passes. But he's, you know, a tough guy that's, you know, has a physical presence to the game. He's strong and he's really, he does his job well. And that's, you know, certainly a place for that. A lot of times his jobs are, you know, getting his hands dirty and doing the dirty work and, you know, making the tough blocks and, you know, pass protecting and doing things like that, but he, you know, he gets in there and he does them well, and you know, he's a guy that we've been dependent on all year, and he's been there for us all year. You know, last year on the practice squad, really, you know, worked hard, was a practice squad player of the week for us, you know, a couple times. That kind of effort and consistency, and you know, earned a spot on the roster this year, and continues to earn it on a weekly basis, doing a lot of different things. You know, and his role in the game isn't always that clearly defined, but at the end of the game, you always come out and say, "Boy, he had, you know, two or three solid plays here or there, and they help you." And he certainly had that yesterday.
It's a position that seems to be on the decline across the NFL in general. There are fewer and fewer fullbacks. They play fewer and fewer plays, it seems, across all 32 teams. How has that position evolved, I guess, would be the question.
Well, I mean, when I came in the league, you know, a lot of the, yeah, I mean, the fullbacks were just as important as ball carrier as the runbacks were, whether it was Franco Harris or the, you know, the Jim Browns of the world and all that, and that the game has evolved to more of a one back, not always one back in the backfield, but one primary back carrying the ball, and that, of course, was, you know, popularized with the one back offenses of Don Coryell and, you know, his disciples, and, you know, a lot of other teams that have adopted that, as well as, you know, the I formation teams that had the fullback really as you know, a glorified lineman in the backfield for, you know, occasional ball handling play. Most of the time he was, you know, like a pulling guard back there. So it's changed quite a bit. Now there's a lot of times there's only one back on the field, period. So, you know, it's definitely a, you know, evolution over the last, you know, 30 years.
How much value do you put on that position in your offense?
Well, again, I think it's a role. It's a role. It's an important role. It's not an every down role, but when you need it, you really appreciate it. And when you need it and you can't get it, then you usually end up paying the price for it. You know, whether it be goal line or short yardage or pass protection or, you know, lead blocking in the running game, that kind of thing. You know you're going to need it sooner or later.
In terms of you guys having a fullback and which type of fullback you've had, that's changed a number of different times over your tenure here. How does that work? Is it we have a role and we look for the player to fill it, or do you find a guy like Devlin or whoever it may be and they then say, yeah, we can use this as part of our offense this year, even though we didn't have it last year?
Yeah, well, I think anytime you have players on your team, on your roster, you eventually gravitate to the things that they do well. So, I mean, if you have, you know, fast receiver like Randy Moss, and you run him deep. If you have a possession receiver like somebody else, that's what you do. If you have an inside runner, you run more inside. If you have an outside runner, you maybe run more outside. So if you have a good blocking fullback, you ask him to block a little more. If you got a guy who's, you know, maybe more of a pass catcher, you know, Heath Evans, who was more of a rip ball carrier, pass catcher type of guy than really a lead blocker, although, you know, then he did a little more of that as well as, you know, some of the fullback blocking responsibilities. But, you know, he also handled the ball more. So so I think it just depends on who that player is. And if you definitely want one particular type of player, then you go out and get that. But if you end up with a guy who's you know, has some talent, has some skill, then you probably work to the things that he does well.
Speaking of the running back position, Stephen Ridley was inactive yesterday. I heard your comments after the game and saying that there were 46 guys that were more important to play yesterday, that were ahead of him yesterday. It was just a couple of weeks ago. You're really effusive in your praise of him after the Pittsburgh game, talking about his pad level, about his hard running, etc. How has that changed in the last 3 weeks?
Well, we make those decisions week to week. So every week we have to make a decision as to who we feel are the players that will activate for the game. And sometimes injuries and the availability of a player takes care of that. After that, it's, you know, it comes down to decisions that we make as coaching staff or that I ultimately am responsible for. So that's the way it is every week.
Have your thoughts about him specifically changed from 3 or 4 weeks ago until today?
No, not fundamentally. But I think, you know, each week we have to, you know, we have to decide what's best for our team. That's what we'll do.
You know, there were reports that Kevin Faulk was in Houston the other night, and he obviously has a relationship with Ridley, going back to LSU alums together. How much can a guy who's gone through something, gone through those issues like Kevin did, from fumbling a lot to being secure, how much can he add and help a guy as opposed to simply a coach who, yes, he knows the game, he's been doing it for a long time, but hasn't lived it as recently as a guy like Faulk has?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure that, you know, anybody who has experience that can relay that experience to somebody who doesn't have as much experience, you know, there's benefit to that. You know, I certainly think that, you know, our coaches and, you know, people who work with our players do a good job of communicating information and giving good coaching points and tips to our players. But there's definitely something to be said for coaches like, you know, Pepper, who have played on the defense, who have played in the National Football League, that, you know, have that perspective. So I think it's a valuable perspective to have. And, you know, I certainly respect that. And that, you know, veteran players on any team have a certain element of that, too. You know, you hear what the coaches say, but, you know, they also have that on-the-field game experience that's a little bit different than, you know, in the classroom and watching film and that kind of thing. And, you know, I know that carries a lot of weight with, you know, younger players, too. So, you know, I definitely think there's a balance there, and there's a good place for both.
70 catches now in the year for Julian Edelman. He seems to have been healthier this year, and I'm sure that's helped lead to some of those numbers.
Well,
are there
question.
Are there other areas of his game beyond just health that took a leap from last year to this year that have allowed him to get to that number?
Well, you know, Julian's one of the hardest working players we have on our team. He's, you know, a very competitive guy that works hard to get things right and do things right, whether it's, you know, blocking or punt returns or route running or whatever it happens to be. So, you know, he's always trying to improve, do a better job, and works very hard at his craft. He's well prepared. And so I think, you know, it's a lot of little things, and certainly the health and have more opportunities being on the field more. And practicing more, you know, all those things have led to more opportunities, and he's done a good job of them.
Minitron, I heard that's the nickname that Brady's calling him. Minitron? Is that something okay. Do you approve of that? Is that something you're using, or is that just Brady's deal?
That's the first time I heard that one.
Kind of like Minitron.
I kind of like it, too. Not that my previous questions were great, but I'm going to admit this may be a strange question. You had your second game yesterday this year with no penalties. And sometimes in basketball, they say you play a game and you don't get called for any fouls. It means you weren't playing good defense. You weren't sort of pushing the envelope a little bit. Is there a comparison to something like that in football where you don't get called for penalties? Maybe you're not testing the officiating, you're not testing the illegal contact, you're not testing the holding, or is that just a totally off-the-wall idea?
Well, there were very many penalties called in the game, period. I mean, I think they only had a couple, right?
Yeah.
So, and that crew, the Morelli crew, has called the fewest penalties in the league this year and for the fewest yards. So, you know, going into the game, based on history, based on what the, you know, what information we had, we weren't expecting it to be a, you know, a very heavily penalized game, because most of those crew's games weren't, but, you know, you always have to wait and see, you know, exactly how the game's going to go, and and you know, deal with it appropriately. But we don't look. We don't coach any penalties. We don't go out there and, you know, tell the players to commit fouls. And I'm sure the Texan coaches don't do that either. So you know, we never try to do that intentionally. Sometimes they happen in football. Sometimes players make mistakes and they occur. Or, you know, you make coaching mistakes and they occur. But you know, yesterday wasn't one of those days. I wouldn't say it was, you know, lack of aggressiveness. I'd say it was, you know, clean play and an officiating crew that let the players play, that they weren't out there to, you know, throw a lot of flags on marginal calls, or, you know, it had to be something that they felt pretty strongly about before they tossed it. And, you know, I mean, I think, honestly, I think the players and the coaches all kind of enjoy playing in a game like that as long as it doesn't get out of hand. You know, if it gets out of hand and nothing gets called and, you know, every play is a you know, a street fight, I mean, it's not what anybody's looking for. But at the same time, it's good to get into a rhythm of the game and play the game, let the players play and, you know, let them compete and not make it about, you know, a bunch of calls of, you know, was it this, was it that, but, you know, kind of just let them go out there and play.
You can add media and fans to that, I
think. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
You know, no one likes to see the game stop every, you know, two or three plays because of a yellow hanky.
I heard you comment after the game when asked about Antonio Smith's comments and say that it's a league matter, and I understand that. Is it frustrating to hear comments like that from the opposition after the game? Does it bother you at all to hear his comments afterwards?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they're frustrated. They lost to us twice last year and lost to us again down there at home. So, you know, I mean, we've seen that before, and I'm sure there was some frustration. But I don't know. You have to talk to him and or follow up the league on the rest of it.
Does it frustrate you at all, though, to hear him?
There's nothing we can do about that. We just worry about what we can do.
You see the end of the Iron Bowl game the other night? Everybody's been,
you know, I haven't seen it. No, we were actually in a staff meeting and I didn't see the end of it.
I mean, it's crazy. You know,
I heard about
happened,
it, yeah.
Right? Have you in your football time, have you seen anything like that happen before? I mean, a decision to kick a long field goal with 1 second left to win a game ends up leading to a run back going the other way.
Well, I mean, we've all seen those run backs before. You know, we actually had one when I was with the Jets. Aaron Glenn returned one, you know, 100 and, against Indianapolis, I think it was. 100 and some yards, 108 yards or whatever it was. I mean, really, the ending to the Auburn-Georgia game was just about as crazy. So, you know, it's those kind of, look, that's when you get to that level of competition, you got a lot of good players out there, a lot of close games, and sometimes they come down to some unexpected plays, you know, Hail Mary plays. And, I mean, we saw one, I mean, Baltimore ended up winning the game, but the Hail Mary play in the Cincinnati-Baltimore game a couple weeks ago. So, you know, they're crazy plays at the end of the game. That's why you got to play 60 minutes and be ready for, you know, all different situations in football. And those are plays that we talk about that rarely come up. But when they do, you know, they can not only affect a game, they can affect your whole season.
So do you have a long field goal attempt unit that might be better suited to tackle than a shorter? Is that something you would plan for?
Well, no, I think you plan to cover with you, I mean, because you don't want to get it blocked.
Right, so you wouldn't, you know, put more linebackers out there to try to tackle, or because, it is a lower trajectory kick and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you want to. I mean, the most important thing on field goal is protection. Right. Besides the specialist, snapper, holder, and kicker, the most important thing is protection, so I don't think you really want to compromise your protection. But, you know, on any long field goal, you always talk about and, you know, go over coverage. Just, you know, basic coverage, even though it doesn't come up very often. But, you know, there's a good example of, you know, when it does, it can be a, you know, and you have a lot of big, slow guys out there on the field. I mean, let's face it, you put your protection team out there, you don't have, you know, a lot of speed and coverage players. You just got to, you know, cover the field and hope that you can, you know, if that comes up, that you're able to, you know, to take up enough space to, you know, not let the guy outrun you. But, you know, if he does, then you're in a lot of trouble because you got to, you know, probably nine guys who are probably your best blockers and a holder and a kicker. So it's not like you have a lot of guys out there that are good tacklers, or, you know, that's their primary skill.
Nick needed like a Stephen Neal out there, an athlete who could.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, when those guys, if they happen to, you know, get loose or get outside, then, you know, there's not many, you know, Not too many. You don't have too many guys out there that can catch them.
Time now for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. The all-new Mercedes-Benz CLA has arrived. See them on the web at mbusa.com. Today's question comes from Seymour, who is in Nashua, New Hampshire. He points out that you were just at Reliance Stadium, which is one of the nicer new jewels of the NFL. In your years of playing football and coaching football, what is the worst stadium that you went to and why?
Well,
it's okay to say Foxborough.
To really think about that one.
It's okay to say Foxborough. Was there a particularly awful locker room?
Yeah, Cleveland locker room was terrible. That was bad.
Is there a vision?
I would say that a lot of the fields back in the 70s were bad because they were baseball stadiums. So like Cleveland, like Baltimore, like, you know, places like that. So in the middle of the season when the sod was put in the infield, it obviously didn't grow very well in November and December. And then what was good field gets chewed up pretty quickly, and, you know, that's not going to grow. So, you know, by the end of the year in November and December in those type of stadiums, you usually had, you know, a lot of wear on the field. Plus you had basically half the field that was sodded, which, you know, wasn't very good either. So, Shea Stadium was another. That was another gem. I think those are some of the issues that you dealt with then. Whereas the football stadiums, at least it was just football. But when you had baseball stadiums, then, you know, the sod and you know. But because when I was at Baltimore in 1975, we practiced in the stadium. So not only do you play in the stadium, man, but you practice on the field. But you only practice on half the field because the other half is, you know, sod that they're trying to, you know, get in place or keep in place, let it grow, and then
imagine doing that now.
Yeah, so it was.
Hey, coach, sorry, you can only use half the field for practice today. You okay?
No, I can still see it with the ropes and, you know, and the grounds crew out there working on the sod while we were practicing down at the other end of the field. The other option was go walk across the street to Eastern High School, which we did that a few times too. And, you know, everybody's got on a uniform, press the walk button, walk across the street. The fans are beeping, you know, and there wasn't a blade of grass on that field. But at least you had the whole 100 yards. But
$100 million players, you know, waiting at a crosswalk to go.
Well, not in those days. But
so you guys go over to Foxborough Field over here and see what happens.
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah, that was. So it was, I mean, the facilities obviously changed a lot. But I'd say those dual-purpose fields they wore out pretty quickly, and particularly in the northern areas where there was no growth in the latter months, that there was nothing you could do except, you know, spray paint them green for TV, but that didn't really help much.
Play Cleveland on Sunday. We will talk to you on Monday. Thanks a lot.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. Andy, thank you.
There you go. There's Bill Belichick back in a moment.